Blog Talk Radio.
Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas on Monday, October 31st. Happy Halloween to all of you out there. And we say happy Halloween to Mr. Trick or Treat himself, Bill Katz, the editor of Urgent Agenda. Bill, how much trick-or-treating have you done?
Well, I decided to pass this year because I am concerned that all that weight I put on when I get these little miniature Milky Ways and things like that, my wife is angry at me for that. So I used to dress up as a child. That's what I did. I dressed up as a child, and I went out trick-or-treating, and people kept on calling mental hospitals, and they kept on picking me up. I don't know. It's terrible. Terrible thing.
So you became sort of a public nuisance. You would go out on Halloween.
Yes, like the governor. I mean, it was, you know.
Yes, we'll talk about the governor a little bit later. But I've got a couple of grandsons who dressed up as the Incredibles. And
yes.
I guess it's a movie. They know more about it than I do. But it's a movie. So on Saturday night, trick-or-treating around here is maybe a little different than other places, but a lot of churches have like trick-or-treating events for the kids.
Yes.
And they, you know, a lot of families come and they sort of recreate a more traditional trick-or-treating experience. And it was a lot of fun for them. And it was a lot of fun for me because, you know, when you're older, the Halloween thing is interesting, but it's not as fun as it is when you're a kid, Bill. When you're
That's
a kid,
okay.
It's a big deal. It's a big deal.
In New York, they've ruined it naturally. I mean, they do things the New York way here. The kids go out and trick or treating, and they bring their lawyer. You know, I mean, it's and they negotiate what the kids should get based on their needs. So,
yes.
But it's you know, I think the biggest trick or treat. Event will probably be the next session of Congress. It usually is where these boys operate. But all the talk here, very little talk here about trick-or-treating. I think it kind of does not have the allure that it had when we were kids. But
Maybe it's because of the apartment buildings, Bill. I've always
yes.
said this, and maybe I'm wrong, but when you are in apartment buildings, you know, you're more restricted as far as going out because you tend
That's
to
right.
maybe trick-or-treat within your own apartment or maybe family. Here we do have streets with homes so you can go out. But a lot of families here have decided that it's a little bit more controllable when you can take them to one place and you know everybody who's giving them candy. So especially nowadays with all the nutty people out there who use candy to promote something else or whatever. But
exactly.
Happy Halloween. Yeah. Happy Halloween to you. And I hope, you know, there's an asterisk. Did you hear about that? There's an asterisk that will miss the Earth by 100,000 miles or something. And did you hear about that? That it's
yes.
To be,
that's a near miss.
That's a near miss, and
yeah.
But I was reading an article saying that that's actually pretty close for cosmic standards.
Yes.
So I said, well, I'm glad, you know, I'm glad it's going to be 100,000 miles away because I want nothing to do. I don't want the world to end before AOC tells us it's going to end, Bill.
That's right, and she would have direct knowledge of this because she's in telephone contact with the people who are running the asteroid.
That's right.
She'll be able to tell us the whole thing.
That's exactly right.
Well, the theory at least is that millions of years ago the Earth was hit by one of those things and it wiped out all life. Up to then, I don't know. I know very little about that. But
somebody was joking about that, Bill, saying that the asteroid is going to wipe out the Democrat Party because they have so many dinosaurs, and it's going to wipe out the Democrat Party next week.
Well, that's probably that may very well happen. It may it may happen in a little more peaceful way a week from Tuesday,
but
we can talk about that. The Democratic Party has never been in as bad shape as it is today.
That's right. But I do want to begin. This is a very brief little sideshow here or sideline. Today we remember a fellow named Michael Collins, who was born in 1930, passed away 2021 last year. And I always thought this was probably the least appreciated man in the history of the world because he was part of the Apollo 11 crew. But he didn't get to land on the moon. He didn't get to walk on the moon. He spent the entire trip going around the moon while the other two guys were on TV and talking to President Nixon and everything else. So I always thought, gee, what a poor guy up there all by himself watching his two buddies getting all the fame and fortune. But, of course, in reality, he was a big part of the mission too, Bill, because it was all about teamwork. And, I always thought this must be a – imagine if they're selecting you to go on the mission, Bill, and they say, okay, you're going to land, you're going to walk, but you're just going to go around the Earth or the moon for 3 days.
I wonder how exciting
that recruiting must have been, Bill.
Well, yeah, yet he did his job. He did it very well. He accepted his assignment. And it is true, though, that his name has been forgotten to history. Now, of course, he is gone. Neil Armstrong is gone. The other astronaut who was with Neil, what's his name?
Buzz Aldrin.
He is still, I think, with us. Has had a somewhat troubled life, and but it's, I remember those days. They were such days of adventure, and we were so excited about the space program. And yet, within ten years of the flight to the moon, the space program was largely a memory. I remember the film The Right Stuff, which was very well made, about the astronauts, came out in the early 80s, and they couldn't get an audience. People just didn't care.
Which is really sad, I think, because those were very exciting moments. I remember sitting in grade school or high school or whatever, depending on what mission it was. And I was sitting there. We always had nice teachers that would turn on the TV.
Yes.
So we could watch this. And I was always very excited about it. I mean, I would always come home and tell my parents about it. And my parents would say, how lucky are you? Look how lucky you are.
That's right.
To see things that we only thought were fiction. You know, my father one time said, I used to buy comics. My father said, I used to buy comics when I was a kid in Cuba, about men going to the moon. And here you're actually watching somebody going to the moon. How lucky you are. I remember my father saying something to me like that in Spanish, Bill.
Yes, that's exactly right. And in fact, I was mentioning to my wife just a few days ago when we were going through some family stuff that it is only in the last century that a human being could see another human being who is dead walking and talking on film.
Mm-hmm.
Singing, yes. Dancing. It had never happened before in the entire history of the world, and we are the century that in which it first occurred. And it is a remarkable thing. We watch, I'm sure you do too, old movies on television. We watched one a few nights ago that was made in 1948, and everyone of the stars in the movie were gone, and yet you could see them alive, moving, singing, dancing. One of the people in the movie was Angela Lansbury, who just died last week.
Mm-hmm.
But Lord knows what we're going to have in the future. I mean, we may very well have a situation where where you can turn on a machine in your living room and see family members who are no longer with us sitting there talking through electronic means. I don't know how good it is. I don't know how good it is. Maybe it's not such a good thing, but it is certainly a miraculous thing.
That's right. Well, I will say one interesting story about that. Obviously, both of my parents are gone now. But I remember before my mother passed away, a year or so before, that a friend of mine said, you know, you ought to sit down with your mother and have her do like an interview with her on video.
Yes.
Not a interview about politics or something, although I'm sure my mother would not mind telling me her political views. She never did. But I'm just saying, just an interview where she could tell stories about her life and all of that on video.
Yes. It's a very good idea.
Yeah, and then when your grandchildren are teenagers, they can actually watch their grandmother or great grandmother in this case just talk like it was a documentary, you know. And I never did it, and I regret that. I regret that because I think there's, you know, especially now that my mother cannot meet the grandchildren, I just, you know, it's hard to connect them the same way. It's always better by video than by telling them stories, Bill.
Oh, absolutely. And I think it's a great idea to interview older relatives and ask them what their life was like, the experiences they've had. I think many people will probably find out that those grandparents were a lot more interesting than we think they are old age. That some of them have fought in a war or and had some remarkable thing in their lives. And I think it's wonderful that children and grandchildren can learn about that in exactly the way that you prescribe.
That's right. So that's something anybody out there listening, if you have the opportunity, I regret not doing it. I really do. I regret not doing it with my mom. Well, Bill, one big story that was not on the original agenda, but it has hit the fan here, is the story of Mr. Pelosi, and I guess I'm glad he's recovering. I'm obviously critical of the man who did this, but you know, that part of it is the story, but it's the coverage that once again disappoints you. And there was a situation with Face the Nation this Sunday where the lady who's the moderator was beating up a Republican congressman because he has an ad, I guess, where he says, fire Pelosi, and he's firing his gun, not at Pelosi, but it's a Second Amendment ad, and he says, fire Pelosi, but not in the sense that he wants to kill her, but in the sense that he wants her gone from the Speaker of the House. And you would have thought that this was like the end of the world, what this congressman did, or that somehow that commercial made whatever happened in Mr. Pelosi's house possible, Bill. It's ridiculous the way the media, or not the media, but some of the media and some Democrats are reacting to this, Bill. Did I lose Bill? Or did I lose me? Let's see. Let me check something here for a second. Let me check something here. Yeah, we're on. I think we lost Bill. Maybe he'll if he has a chance, maybe he'll call back and chat with us or reconnect with us. But you know, this whole situation with Paul Pelosi was just so ridiculous that I don't know what to tell you other than it just caught me. It made me angry because everybody is opposed to what happened to him. I don't know of anybody who defends what happened to him. I don't know anybody who does that. And yet here we are, you know, having to somehow explain what happened to Pelosi. I mean, it's just an absolutely ridiculous thing that we have to go through. And the media just keeps doing this. Many in the media, I should say, keep doing this. It's not just one person or, you know, not one particular member of the media, but you know, people. I think we got Bill back. Let me see if we got him. Yeah.
Member of the media, but
Bill, I think we got you back. We lost you there for a second. I'm sorry about that. I don't know what happened.
I have no idea. You can hear me clearly now, can you?
Yeah, I can hear you great, but all of a sudden, you disappeared. And
yeah,
I checked myself to make sure that it wasn't me, but we're on.
It was global warming, as you.
Well, I was going to say it was global warming, or maybe somebody pulled the plug because I criticized Face the Nation. I don't know. I don't know what happened.
Yes. Yeah.
But
well,
you're familiar.
Know,
I don't know if you're familiar with what happened on Face the Nation.
Oh yes, yes, and look, the press is on the left. They want they don't want this election to happen. They're trying to find some way to blame the Republicans for what happened to Mr. Pelosi. It is, as you say, completely ridiculous. But that's their October surprise. They found something. Now, I have a lot of questions about this case. First of all, we don't know much about the man who committed or allegedly committed the assault. For all I know, they could have known each other. I find it amazing that he got into that house so easily. I mean, it is the house... where the Speaker of the House of the United States lives. He got in by breaking a window. For goodness sakes, don't they have better security? I mean, you would think they would. And all the things that have happened since, we can't seem to get much information, except that he has a history of mental illness. Some family members spoke. And they're trying to blame Republicans and saying, well, all this violent talk. Violent talk, for goodness sakes, we have seen in the last few years parts of cities burning in the United States because of left-wing violence, and the same reporters have nothing to say about it. It is so wrong what they do. They have damaged their country, these reporters. They damage journalism, which is ranked very low in the United States right now. You'd think they'd want to keep their news organizations on a certain level, but anything to win. Anything to
That's
win,
right.
and they, it's the point has been made many times that Hillary Clinton got away with things that no Republican could get away with.
If it's
a Republican, they're treated very differently, and I think the American people see it, and they have begun to discount many news reports.
Right, and when I first heard of this, and I guess it was Friday when it happened, my first thought was, I hope he's okay. I hope that, he's okay. It's a terrible thing to have to go through, so I hope he's okay. Apparently he was, later we heard. But then the question I asked myself was, number one, how can the Speaker's house be that unprotected? I'm not saying that you have to have the 82nd Airborne around her house, but you would think there'd be somebody at the door, a guard, maybe a Doberman in the house, something to warn him. The other thing, too, is that we often forget this about Paul Pelosi. Paul Pelosi is a very successful businessman, very wealthy businessman in California. My experience is, from those I've had a chance to know or those I've heard about, they generally have some kind of protection for this kind of reason. And the idea that you could walk into a famous person's home like that, it's almost unbelievable to me. I have, it costs like $99 a month to have a safety system in your house, an alarm system, and here's a multimillionaire many times doesn't have one. So it just leaves me with all kinds of questions. Now, whatever happened between the two of them and whether they knew each other, I don't really know about that, and I'm willing to give Mr. Pelosi the benefit of the doubt on that. But my goodness, that house was not protected. That's just beyond me, Bill.
Well, I fully agree with you. And as I said before, I mean, the guy got in by breaking a window, and this should have been one of the most protected houses in America. And now, though, the Dems are trying to make a thing out of it. I don't think they'll succeed. I think, in fact, it might backfire on them if they try to Republican rhetoric. Some journalists have demanded that the Republicans end their campaign over what happened. I mean, really ridiculous. These are people who do not really believe in democracy or in freedom. They believe that democracy exists only when they win. If they win, it's democracy. If it isn't, there must be some sinister plot. It's sad to see what's happened to American journalism. I don't know if it's repairable. It may not be. We may have to look for ways to find new news organizations. But to try to in some way claim that this is caused by the Republican Party is ridiculous. I also wonder now, we have 7 days to go to the election, 8 days, if there's anything that's going to come at the end of this week. I think there's every prospect that there will be an election surprise. It may not originate in the Democratic Party. It might originate in a newspaper, which may be preparing some expose, which will break just before the election. I wouldn't put it past them, because anything goes to win.
That's right. But I will say this, though. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I say they see themselves as the saviors of society, which they are not.
Right. But I was talking to some friends over the weekend, and on not exactly the point you're making, but something related to like Herschel Walker, and I said, you know, we are so immune from these stories. I've gotten to the point that any story I hear in the last 2 weeks of a campaign of a woman showing up in a newspaper saying that when I was 17 years old, he touched me on the leg or something, I think we're immune from that because we know that it's all a bunch of crap. And it's like, I remember when, remember the story in Alabama when that guy was running for the Senate, that the woman came up with that 38 years before he had touched her on the leg or something.
Speaking
of my late mom for a second, my late mother's reaction to that, well, why didn't she just snap him in the face? Okay.
Yes,
instead of waiting 38 years to talk to the Washington Post, why didn't she do something about it right there? And,
exactly right. And you also wonder why a story like that only seems to appear at election time. I mean, it's so blatantly obvious that these things are used for political purposes, and it makes a mockery of the issue of sexual violence against women, because there are women who really have been hurt, and they go into the background, and some fraud or somebody who was touched 38 years ago becomes suddenly important. This happened with Judge Kavanaugh. It happened with others.
Yes.
These stories suddenly come out at a critical time in their lives, and it does make a mockery of the issue. It is wrong. And, of course, you know, we do remember that a man was arrested outside Judge Kavanaugh's house recently, and has been charged with coming to his home in Virginia with an intent to hurt him. And you'd think that would be mentioned in this discussion about Paul Pelosi, but it's not, because Judge Kavanaugh is the wrong party. Slander journalism, that doesn't begin to describe what we have today. We have corrupt journalism.
That's right. But Bill, I think, you know, it's like what I was saying a minute ago, I think that we're immune from it. At least I am. You know, when I see these stories, when I see the President of the United States today saying that, well, you know, these stories about election denying, you know, they're you know, bad for democracy and all that kind of stuff. Well, yeah, what stories about election denying is he talking about, Bill? Because I can remember him saying that Trump was not legitimate. So, I mean, it's like, how foolish do they think we are, Bill?
Well, the press and the Democratic Party combined has a very low opinion of the American people. It's part of their problem, and it's part of the reason why they do the foolish things they do. They believe we're going to buy anything, just accept anything from them, and we're not. I think the American people are a lot more intelligent and much sharper than the people on the left think we are. They think we're their little children, and, of course, one of the objectives of the left, whenever they gain power, is to infantilize the population. It is a left-wing technique. Make the population feel helpless and useless, unless, of course, they want to do something, and then they need the Democratic Party and their friends to get them anything. It is an old technique that was perfected in the Soviet Union, the idea that we, the leaders, are the adults, and you, the followers, are the children.
That's right. That's exactly right. And in this case, I think the good news, the bad news is that they do it. But the good news is I believe a lot of people are immune to it. In other words, in the sense that they say, oh, there they go again. Another woman 2 weeks before the election comes out. Another woman. And look at Herschel Walker in Georgia, he seems to have turned it around and looks stronger now than ever. So I think people are immune from it. Let's talk about the midterms, Bill. You've written several posts here recently about the trend. You know, the trend seems to be favorable to the Republicans at the moment. And of course, you and I have spoken before about polls that you have to, you know, you cannot take them as 100% solid. You know, you got to be careful. You still have to get out there and vote, and that's important. But right now, the trend seems to be favoring the GOP, at least according to RCP. If the election was held today, the Senate would be 53-47 GOP, and the House would be anywhere from 20 to 40 GOP. That would be the plus. So that would be a pretty good day if that were to happen, Bill.
It would be a very good day. It's important that the Republicans take both houses. It's also important that people, you know, not take every report from pollsters literally. One of my nightmares about this election is that there will be a Republican wave, but in many individual contests, it will fall just short of victory. You know, you can have a surge. They use the word surge a lot now. It's the big word. There's a Republican surge. We sense it everywhere. Joe, don't you? Yes, of course, Al. There is a surge. But a surge is only important in politics if it brings you over the top, if it puts you into the leadership position. If you're 25 points behind, and you have a surge, and you make up 20 of those 25 points, and you're in the newspapers, the reporters are coming to your house, you've made up 20 points in a month, Mr. Candidate, and if it stops at that point, you're still 5 points behind, and you're going to lose on Election Day. And in politics, this is not the Olympics. It's not the Olympics. There's no silver medal in politics. And you don't even get honorable mention. You either win or you lose. And if you lose, no one the next day is going to remember your surge. They'll remember only the fact that another guy won. So I'm worried about people not understanding that. I'm also worried about the fact that on Election Day that we may see the effects of the surge, but that in a number of heartbreaking cases, we will fall just short simply because that's where the votes are. I'm also worried about, very much worried about, it's another one of my nightmares about this election, about the absentee ballots that are out there. It's universally said that even with the Republican surge, most races are rather close. Well, if they're that close, absentee ballots can make the difference. And wouldn't it be shocking if a number of the people who won on election night eventually would lose because of absentee ballots, and that would result in a huge uproar and a question of who's counting those ballots. Absentee ballots, exactly. Are paper ballots. They're paper ballots. They're not done electronically, and the Democratic Party has always been in love with absentee ballots. And if that happens, and if the elections are reversed, then you will really have an uproar, and once again, the press will say this uproar is nothing more than an assault on our democracy, on our elections,
right.
and we're going to go through that same ritual again. I'm hoping that none of these bad things happen, and that the Republicans take the House by a respectable margin, and I do hope they win the Senate. The Senate is where judges are confirmed,
right.
And that is a critical function right now. The Republicans must be able to control the United States Senate, and they may just do it, but it's going to be a tough one. It's not the Senate, the way the seats are apportioned and who holds what seats. It's not a great year for the Republicans in the Senate, but I think that with the enthusiasm behind them, they could get those two or three seats needed to control the Senate. But then there's a surprise. There could be another surprise coming. If they, let's say, win the Senate by one seat, what will Mitt Romney do?
Mm.
Will he continue his association and vote to make the Senate a Republican majority, or will he suddenly make a public speech and said, in good conscience, I can't do this, and remain silent and allow the Democrats to continue to run the Senate. That hasn't been covered. Another one in that category is Lisa Murkowski of Alaska,
right.
If she pulls out her race. Those are two Republicans, Romney much worse in his behavior than Murkowski, but one or both of them could join the opposition. Say,
but Joe Manchin could also do it on the other side, Bill. I was just talking about. Yeah, less likely, but I think you're right. But let me take a break because I do want to pursue this topic with you a little bit further on the second half. We're going to take a little break, and we'll be back with our friend Bill Katz right after this. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas, chatting with our friend Bill Katz, the editor of Urgent Agenda, something we like to do once a week, as all of you know. Bill, I wanted to pursue this very interesting analysis. You were talking about Senator Romney and Senator Murkowski of Alaska. I guess one way of avoiding that is to get 53 seats, because then if you do, you don't have to worry about those two. Because there's 51 seats, and you get the majority that way. So that would be my solution, try to win 51 seats. And if I could just mention something about, you were talking about counting votes and having to wait days for results. Brazil, a very big country with about over 210 million people, I think, or more than that, had an election on Sunday. One day, that's all they have, one day. From 7 o'clock in the morning to 7 o'clock at night, 130 million people voted, Bill, in that country. And that's a big country. And there are parts of that country that are not exactly well-connected. I mean, they're very out there in the outskirts, as they say. And yet, by 7 o'clock that night, they had 99% of the vote counted, and they were able to declare a winner. So if Brazil can do it, I think we should be able to do it too, Bill. Why are we delaying these results? Now, I guess part of the answer is that in Brazil they have one national federal commission where all the votes are counted in one place, whereas in the United States you literally have 50 places where they count them. And that may be the explanation for the delay, Bill. I don't know. But I love to see a situation where by 7 o'clock, 8 o'clock, 9 o'clock, at least Pacific time, we know who won the election, Bill.
I certainly hope so. And maybe there have been some improvements in some localities. But as I said, I have this fear that we will be told one thing on election night, and then, oh, but the absentee ballots have yet to be counted. And it causes a lack of confidence in the system, and yet anybody who criticizes the system is called an assaulter of democracy. It's an assault on our democracy. Remember when the Republicans began to speak out publicly against press bias, and immediately the left wing said that's an assault on our democracy. No, it's not.
Right.
Criticizing the press is not an assault on democracy. See?
Not at all.
I mean, that's the line. It's being used. I saw it used by a couple of prominent Democrats this morning, that this election is about democracy and whether democracy can continue in America. This election is not about democracy. This election is no different than any other election. There may be some areas that need to be looked at and maybe need to be recounted or disqualified. And we've had that for how many decades? For goodness sake. Lyndon Johnson's nickname in politics was Landslide Lyndon, because he won his Senate seat by 87 votes, and nobody knows where those votes came from. And I've told you the story many times of being in Chicago the night of the 1960 election, and we didn't know who won Illinois, and Illinois was going to be crucial to the outcome of the election. And the only question asked that night on the streets of Chicago was, well, how many votes does the mayor need? It was just assumed that those votes would be found. And yet when we talk about stolen elections today, when we talk about corruption in vote counting today, the press reacts with shock. How can you attack our democracy that way? Why, are you a believer in fascism? Very, very, very weak coverage of the count. You know, it was Joseph Stalin, as I think we've discussed this before, Joseph Stalin, who said it doesn't really matter who votes. What counts is who counts the votes.
Yes,
and
Joseph
and
Stalin,
exactly
that
right.
Great Democrat, right? That great spokesman for democracy, right? Joseph Stalin. But he's right. I mean, he is right. It depends who counts him. I mean, that is the bottom line. Whoever counts the votes, I guess, will decide. I think I said the story one time, Bill. Maybe not. So I'll say it. In 1988, they were having an election in Mexico, and the opposition party by 10 o'clock was looking very good. You know, many people thought, okay, they're going to win. They're finally going to win. And then at 10 o'clock roughly that night, the computer broke down.
Yes.
The computer that counts the votes broke down. And the next day, the establishment party won the election with 50.1% of the vote. How a convenient number that is, right? To get 50.1 to win the election after the computer broke down. So I will tell you this, though. I don't want to get ahead of myself because I'm confident that the Republicans will win it easily this year. Because I do think there is going to be a pretty big wave. But if there is another repeat of 2020 with these late night counts, and I think the public is going to explode. I really do. I just don't think the public is going to put up with it, Bill. I don't care what the media says. They're always going to talk about election denying. But nobody really follows them anymore. I mean, a lot of the media, they're basically talking to themselves. I mean, a lot of these Sunday morning shows are basically for Washington, D.C., not really for anybody else, Bill. They used to be different, but now I think a lot of it is just internal there in Washington, D.C., Bill.
Well, that's a different world. Washington is a different world than the country because Washington lives only for politics. It's quite remarkable. And I think we can plainly see and plainly say that the Washington crowd does not represent the people of the United States. Not only that, the Washington crowd doesn't know the people of the United States. You just hear these discussions on television, and they seem so detached from reality, from what the real situation is with the American people. They don't like the American people in the Democratic Party. They kind of make that clear. I mean, Barack Obama made it very clear. You know, they cling to their guns and their religion. What kind of a comment is that to make? And Hillary Clinton referring to people as deplorables. They don't like the people of their country. They believe they should be running the country and that they will then change the people of the country because, after all, they don't know what's good for them. Only we know what's good for them.
Right.
And this is
now,
I think the party has been taken over by that element.
Oh, I agree with you. I agree with you. Just hear what they're saying. But President Obama is campaigning now. He is campaigning, and he was on the road this weekend, and I don't know how successful he will be, honestly. If you remember, back in 2016, they sent him to Philadelphia. They sent President and Mrs. Obama to Philadelphia on the last weekend of the campaign, and it didn't turn that around. Trump ended up winning Philadelphia, but I just don't know how strong of a campaigner or how big of a difference President Obama makes anymore, Bill. I mean, he's popular among people who are already going to vote. I guess that's my point. But I'm not sure he turns on. I mean, I honestly think the world, our political system changed with Trump, for the good or bad, but it changed. And it seems like everybody before Trump, it's like a footnote. I mean, George W. Bush, never hear from him. Bill Clinton, we never hear from him. Barack Obama, really don't hear from him that much either. It just seems like everything is about Trump these days, Bill.
Yes, and isn't it interesting, though, that in poll after poll, the American people are asked, do you want Donald Trump and or Joe Biden to run again? And the answer is no on both of them.
Right.
I think most Americans want to get past the Trump period.
I agree.
You know, we're making an assumption, or we have made an assumption in the past, that if Trump runs, he gets the nomination. I'm not so sure of that. I think that people like Ron DeSantis will say he's not invulnerable. He's very vulnerable, and they may announce somebody else may get the nomination, or there may be the famous committee that always exists in politics of prominent Republicans who will go to Trump and say maybe it's better that you don't run, Mr. President. The polls are not with you, and it's going to be very, very disruptive. I don't know what he does in a situation like that. He's a rather arrogant guy, as we know. He might try to defy them, but he may not actually have the votes. If Ron DeSantis runs against Donald Trump, we may see a political revolution, and I think it may happen. I think Ron DeSantis might run. I think that Governor Youngkin of Virginia might run. They're both very attractive candidates.
Yes, they are.
I think there may be some newcomers who might decide to throw their hat in the ring. I do think that one thing we have to be careful of on our side is that there are some people in the party who are, so to speak, a little wacky. And they may be attractive on the stump and attractive in running for a nomination, but they have to be looked at much more carefully. I'm also concerned in that sense about any vice presidential candidates. Let's say Ron DeSantis does run and does get the nomination. He's going to have to go over vice presidential possibilities with a fine-tooth comb because some of them may have things in their background. There is a kooky element to the Republican Party as there is on the other side. And if you take, for example, someone like Carrie Lake, now she's become something of a phenomenon, a very attractive candidate, very well-spoken, but it's been pointed out that she has made some comments and had some associations that are going to require some scrutiny before anybody picks her to be on the ticket, even though she'd be a terrific candidate. But we have to do a terrific job of everything to win back this country in 2024.
I agree. No, I agree with you. Now, let me switch to a topic. You wrote a very interesting post about about public education, the crisis in public education, and that kind of ties into the midterms because I believe the two big stories on election day are going to be the parents, mom and dad, voting, and they're going to be voting against the teachers union and doing it by voting against Democrats. And then the other big story is the Hispanic vote, which I think is going to be very interesting also. But parents are furious with public education. You cannot blame them. And if you're a parent and you're paying property taxes, that's the case here in Texas, to support public education, and you look at the product and you say, my goodness, we're paying all these taxes to support a system that is not graduating people. There are kids graduating who don't even know how to read and write. We have all these problems in public education. We don't like this system, and we're tired of paying for it. I don't remember if that was the angle on your story, but that's what I'm hearing from a lot of parents, Bill. And if I had parents in school, I might be saying the same thing. And I'd be, you know, encouraging our legislature to pass school choice. Which, by the way, I think that's going to be one of the big winners of 2022 the school choice
bill.
I think more and more states, because that's another story. I'm kind of throwing a lot of things at you, Bill. But another story I think of 22 is going to be the number of state legislatures that are turning Republican. I mean, the Republican Party is doing a fantastic job at the state legislature level. And, you know, by the end of this year, I think it could be 31 or 32 state legislatures run by the Republican Party and something like 27 or 28, where you have a Republican governor and legislature, Bill, so you can do a lot of things.
Yeah.
That's kind of a long-winded question, but kind of wanted to get that in, Bill.
I think it's an important question because, there's an old saying in New York that there are more tenants than there are landlords. And the politicians in New York learned that years ago, and imposed rent control. That's how rent control got started. The landlords were giving them money to run campaigns and all the rest, and they were friendly with the landlords, but they realized that the votes were with the tenants, and they instituted systems of rent control, which proved to be very popular. I think you've got a very similar situation today. There are a lot more parents than there are members of the teachers' unions. And the Democratic Party, which is very heavily influenced by the teachers' unions, will eventually realize that. You know, do we go with the parents or do we go with the teachers' unions? And I think they're going to have to distance themselves somewhat because I believe, and I think you pretty much said it also in your comments, that school choice is going to be one of the biggest issues in this country in the next 5 years, if not the biggest issue, because look at the sheer number of parents of school-age children that we have, and they overwhelmingly prefer school choice. The question is going to be asked, well, if a woman has the right to choose to terminate a pregnancy, why doesn't she have the right to choose the school for her child? It's a very powerful argument, and most parents want that. You know, the system that is being set up, I think it actually is now in place in Nevada, in Arizona, is that the school funding goes with the child.
Right.
That the child can enroll, if the parent can get in, to any school that the parent wishes, and the government will pay the equivalent of tuition to that particular school. So you have real flexibility on the part of parents. It will be very popular. And what will the Democratic Party have to sell? I mean, the Democratic Party really has no issues left because all their stands are so unpopular.
Right. And, of course, with school choice, the two groups that I believe will be most in favor of it will be blacks and Hispanics because they are suffering. I mean, their schools, you know, the schools particularly in the inner city are a disaster. And, you know, if you have a decent family where parents want to give their kids a good education, school choice makes a lot more sense than sending them to failing public schools. But a lot of this ties in, Bill, to, I don't know if you saw the story that came out in the Wall Street Journal, where the Catholic schools did very well during the pandemic. The kids going to Catholic schools didn't have any problems during the pandemic. They didn't miss a lot of time in class. And their test scores didn't have a problem. But it's the kids in the public schools in the same city. So you have a situation in one, you know, you have a situation, Bill, in one neighborhood where this family was going to a Catholic school and their kids are fine. I mean, their kids, their test scores are fine. And they were going to school and, you know, they weren't doing school in home or, you know, they weren't virtual learning or whatever they call it. And so the families with the kids who couldn't go to school, their kids are hurting. The family who was going to the Catholic schools, their kids are doing fine. I mean, that's the best advertising for school choice that I've ever heard, Bill.
Absolutely. Well, it's going to be a big issue, and the Democratic Party is going to have to deal with it. You know, we may be seeing a new era in American politics. Apparently, there are a number of groups within the Democratic Party that have become wobbly. We know about the Hispanic communities. The numbers are just there. There will be a very large Hispanic vote on the Republican side next Tuesday. Also, we see that among black men in particular, they are also moving to some degree. There will not be a majority vote in the black community for the Republicans, but the Democratic vote will be down. And in each one of these communities, these are constituencies the Democrats depend on, and they are losing them little by little. And there'll be a point where the Democratic Party will not be able effectively to function. And that day may be a lot sooner than we think. And then the question becomes, will there be a new political party? I think it's an important question. I thought it was interesting a few days ago that Mike Bloomberg, the former mayor of New York, who has his own news service, Bloomberg News, wrote a very detailed article on education. I don't recall any other articles by Mike Bloomberg about education, but I'm wondering if he will make his move if the Democratic Party is really shut out next week and say it's time for a new party and I will help finance it.
Absolutely. Well, I wouldn't be surprised if he does it. He's got the money. He's got the money. He's
certainly
got the most important part and the ideas. But the numbers that I saw, I think what you're talking about, were 40% Hispanic, 21% black men. Those are brutal numbers. If you're a Democrat, those are numbers that will hurt you quite a bit. One last question, Bill, as we wrap up this week. I'm sure you're caught up in the Twitter story. Seems like Elon Musk has upset the liberals quite a bit by deciding to take over Twitter. And it seems like a lot of people are having, I don't know, pretty crazy reactions as well. And have you been following that at all, or do you find that entertaining?
I do, Bill?
It's
a big story here. The left is going berserk on that and on many other things as well, because they won't be in control of these companies anymore. And they depended on Twitter to do their censorship for them. The left has become very casual about censorship. You might have noticed also, in addition to this story, the equally important story that, 500 people in the publishing industry have petitioned the publisher of Justice Barrett's new book to not publish the book on the grounds that it's harmful. There are harmful ideas there, and they're very serious people. They're prominent people in publishing. They say, we don't believe in censorship. We are believers in free speech. Now, of course, there's this case, and she is spreading misinformation on a human rights issue, the human rights issue being, in their view, the right to have an abortion, and the book should not be published. I don't think they're going to get far. I really don't.
No, I don't think so. I don't think she'll have any trouble publishing her book anyway, Bill. She can self-publish pretty easily. So I don't think she'll have any trouble. But I think you're right, though. I mean, a lot of these people are – I think they're crazy. And I've said it before on our podcast, and I'll repeat it. I am amazed at what abortion has done to the Democrat Party. Whether you believe in abortion or not, I mean, how crazy it's made a lot of these people. And they're doing – I mean, it's crazy. It's like you're sitting there saying, come on, we're talking about an abortion, and yet it's become like a sacrament for these people. It's crazy.
Oh, absolutely. That is their main issue. That is the right that they hold foremost, and they believe everybody else believes that too. You know, these are people who only talk to people who agree with them.
Right.
They often will not even allow in their home that conservative scum, those people who believe differently. How dare they? And they really believe that this is the biggest issue on the American agenda right now, and they will not believe anything else. But yes, absolutely. The Twitter story is a big story. The attempt to get Justice Barrett's book banned, essentially, all it's going to do is increase the sales of the book.
Sure.
I mean, now everybody wants to know what's in it. And I have no doubt that they have other things down the line that they will try with the full help of many journalists.
Absolutely. But I'm sure she'll get her book published. She'll sell her copies.
Absolutely.
And God willing, she's going to be on the court for probably another 35 years. So they're going to have to put up with her for a while, because she's young enough that she'll be there probably easily into the middle of the century, if not more. And how consequential she will be, I don't know. That's hard to tell. But she's going to be there for a very long time. Wouldn't be surprised if she ends up being Supreme Court Justice or Chief Justice.
Wouldn't be surprised if that
were to happen down the road. Well, Bill, happy Halloween. I hope you do a lot of trick-or-treating. And if they come to your door, you can just tell them to read Urgent Agenda, Bill.
I will tell them, and I will give out copies.
Yeah, give out a copy and say, this is what you need to do, kid. No candy for you.
That's right.
Click this link and tell your mom about it.
Just read, exactly. That's a very good thought. I'm running out right now.
Yeah, go ahead and print a bunch of little note cards with the link to Urgent Agenda, and tell them your show with me will be on tomorrow morning, Bill.
Well, I will tell them that, and to listen next week, because we're going to be talking next Monday,
yes,
before the election.
That's exactly right. Have a great day, Bill, and thanks as always for your time.
My pleasure, Sylvia. Looking forward to our next meeting.
All right. Thank you so much. Our good friend Bill Katz, the editor of Urgent Agenda, talking a little bit about trick-or-treating there on Happy Halloween. I hope you have a wonderful Halloween. A lot of the trick-or-treaters are going to be coming around here in the next couple of hours, so we look forward to that. Thank you for listening. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas.